chapter 1, text number 52, concerning the history of the life of Ajamila. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Deya Gyojita Sadvargo. Nechan Karmani Karyate. Koshakara Ivatmanam. Karmanachad Yamuyati. Dehi, the embodied soul. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, Om Vishnu Paraparamahansa Paribrajakacharya Abhaya Charana Arvinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The foolish, embodied living entity, inept at controlling his senses and mind, is forced to act according to the influence of the modes of material nature against his desires. He is like a silkworm that uses its own saliva to create a cocoon and then becomes trapped in it with no possibility of getting out. The living entity traps himself in a network of his own fruitive activities and then can find no way to release himself. Thus, he is always bewildered and repeatedly he dies. Please repeat. The foolish embodied living entity, inept at controlling his purport. As already explained, the influence of the modes of nature is very strong. The living entity, entangled in different types of fruitive activity, is like a silkworm trapped in a cocoon. Getting free is very difficult unless he is helped by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Agyanti. The foolish living. So the question should be that if I'm eternal, why do I subject myself to a situation of birth and death? I'm going through this process of birth and death, but if I'm eternal, why am I subjecting myself to that? I don't have to, because I don't die. So, but why am I putting myself in a position where I am actually experiencing birth and death? So, this should be the question for the intelligent living being, not the foolish embodied living being. Then he can get proper guidance from the Vedic knowledge, from the sadhu, from the guru. And ultimately, as it says here, getting free is very, very difficult unless he is helped by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, you can't even come into the material world to enjoy it without help of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You don't have the potency. First of all, you don't have the potency to create a situation for your enjoyment. So Krishna has to create it for you. He has to create the material world because we can't create it. Even though we want to come in here and act independently from Krishna, we still need his help. He has to create the material cosmos. And even we can't come here by ourselves. He has to actually send us here. And even he gives us the proper consciousness to act in the material world by taking away forgetfulness of him. So actually everything is by the help of Krishna. That's just to come here. So to get out, it's the same thing. We need his help. Everything is done by Krishna through different agents. It's nothing but Krishna in activity, actually. But it's just done through different potencies and agencies. So similarly, it's Krishna through his different potencies that also takes one back home, back to Godhead, when he's intelligent enough to understand the process. Otherwise, the living entity is bound up in this conditional life. And even he wants to get out, it's very, very difficult. To find the proper way to get out of this material entanglement is very, very difficult. Bahunam jamananti jnanavam. A wise man, a jnani, who's actually endeavoring to understand the truth. It takes him thousands and thousands and thousands of births just to come to that point of understanding. Vasudeva sarvam iti. Understanding Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything. That's just bringing to that point. Even just the beginning of sambandhi. Then he's got to take to it. Then he's actually got to surrender to Krishna and take the process. This is thousands and thousands of births. So it's so difficult. But if one meets a devotee of Krishna, because Krishna, Prabhupada says, he's helped by Krishna. So Krishna gives help. He sends his representative. We can understand directly that's Krishna giving his help. Prabhupada said in connection with that Bahunam Jamananti verse in Bhagavad Gita, he said here Krishna is saying that it's taken thousands and thousands of births searching, looking, jnani, before you come to that point of understanding Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrendering to him. He said, I'm telling you that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm telling you right now, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you hear me, and you accept that, and you act on that word, you skip over those thousands and thousands of births. Because I've given you the conclusion of the thousands and thousands of births. Krishna's given the conclusion. This is the conclusion that you'll surrender to Krishna after thousands of births. So if you hear me, I'm telling you, and you act on that, you accept it and act on it, you just jump over those thousands and thousands of births. So this is the glory of meeting a pure devotee. Because he can tell you who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Krishna. Immediately you can jump over that. So this is the the benefit of sadhu sangha. Devotional sadhu. There are so many sadhus, but you have to find the devotee sadhu. We're just celebrating this Puri Yatra. It was a celebration for me. It was my anniversary. I met the devotees there first time, so it was like an anniversary on that day. Returning to Puri. But I was also inquisitive. I was searching for the truth. And I'd been in India for about 1 year. And I met the devotees. And they were chanting, doing some kirtan in front of Jagannath Rath Yatra. I didn't know anything about what was going on, but I was happened to be there. So I said to the devotees, why are you chanting Krishna's name? Why not Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh? This is the ultimate, you know, the Trinity in Hinduism. It's like the ultimate thing you can get to, right? Because 99.9% of the sadhus you meet out in India is Mayavad. Practically all the whole world, actually. But so you come up to the Trinity, you can't go much beyond that. That's the ish. And so while you are chanting Krishna's names, you know, Nawat, Brahma, Shiva, Mahesh. And he says, we're chanting Krishna's names because Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I was just stumped. And I thought, nobody ever told me that before. Nobody ever told me God was a person. I've been meeting so many sadhus. Nobody ever told me that before. So here was a new bhakta, practically, from Malecha Desh. He was Australian. Prabhupada said he's a Malecha Desh. And the first thing he says to me is, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I was there in Rishikesh, listening to the Divine Life Mission speakers. So many sadhus, cultured men, cultured, born in Bharat Bhasha, taken to life as saintly. They didn't know. I meet the new bhakta, Malecha, from Malecha Desh. First thing he says to me, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is how a devotee, he can save you so quickly from the cycle of birth and death and establish you in your constitutional position as the eternal servant of Krishna. And all the others, they don't come nowhere near that. Nowhere near. Aham Brahmasmi, they'll teach you ultimately. You're the same. The closest they get is a little bit of sambandha. Relationship in oneness. That it's a little bit removed. But that's the closest thing they get. And that takes a very, very long time. Beginning of sambandha. But you meet the devotee, and the first thing he says, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you're his eternal servant. And do some service, Prabhu. And you get sambandha and abhidaya in one day. You walk in the temple in ISKCON, you get sambandha and abhidaya in one day. You get relationship and you get the process. It's a fact. The first thing we do, we engage someone in service. And the others, the thousands and thousands of birth, they don't even come to, hardly coming to the point of sambandha. But you meet a devotee immediately. He winds everything up very quickly. Because he situates you in devotional service, your constitutional position. Jivaya Surupaya Nitya Krishna Das. So here, how everyone is bewildered. Even the so-called wise men are bewildered about what to do, what not to do. So, how can they understand? Here, the previous verse. It says the subtle body, it means your mind, intelligence, and ahankara, which is the cause of this body. The cause of this gross body is our subtle body. In previous birth, mind, intelligence, and ego, because of the activities and the consciousness, that subtle body, that doesn't die. The gross body dies, but the subtle body, then it carries that same influence to this and gives us this, creates this new body to fulfill the desires of our subtle body. So, and he said the subtle body is an effect of the modes of material nature. The mind is simply a product of the false ego mixed with goodness, the mode of goodness. And intelligence, it mixes with passion, it comes from passion. So the three modes, they control, it's composed of the material, of the three modes of material nature, the subtle body. And, or the effect of the three modes, and it is composed of insurmountable strong desires. That's what it's, the subtle body is composed of insurmountable strong desires. And that's just exactly what it is. It's just a strong desire you have to fulfill some ambition. And that ambition is not to serve Krishna. And therefore, it causes you to transmigrate birth after birth after birth, all the different species of life, looking for that satisfaction, some place to rest. But nobody ever finds it until one meets a devotee and comes to the position of rendering service to Krishna. Then he is satisfied and peaceful. So the mind is an effect of the three modes of material nature, combined with the false ego. So how you can understand anything with that? It's a material mind for a start. Krishna says earth, water, fire, and air, mind, intelligence. They're all material elements. So now we're trying to understand transcendence. What is beyond the mind? What is that eternal? Who am I? What is the soul? I'm trying to understand what is God, which is beyond material elements. So how you can understand what is beyond material element with the material mind? This was one of the arguments that I think Ramanuja, maybe Madhavacharya, because often they have debates with the Mayavadis and the Vaishnavas. So one time there was a big debate and he defeated the Mayavadis with his argument. Now you're trying to understand what is Brahman, that eternal nature, but the thing is you're using the process of Gyan by your speculation with your mind. You're using the mind is a material tool. You're using a material tool to understand Adhoksaja, what is beyond material. So how you can ever do that? And in that meeting, they were completely defeated. They had nothing to say. So it's like that. How you can understand what is beyond matter with a material tool? Mind is a material element. So it's very difficult and perplexing for a person who is wise to get out, because he's using material means to understand something that's beyond the material mind, that is transcendence. So everything becomes very complex and complicated. So then one at least is obliged to act according to the Vedic principles, because they are supposed to be the guidelines for mankind. So at least act according to the Vedic rules and regulations, and then slowly it helps you to become purified, and then you can ultimately understand, try to understand what is the real purpose of life. So then you get the first class person, Aryan, follower of Vedic culture. So then, according to Veda, when you are born, you are immediately a debtor. You have six kinds of debts. You're indebted to your mother and father who gave the body, to your teachers, to the rishis that give you knowledge in your family line, to the demigods supplying light, heat, water, air, to the kings or the people who maintain the state. You're living in a society. You have a debt to pay back. So immediately upon birth, you are a debtor. You have six debts. It's called Rini. Rini? Rini. You're a debtor at the very time of birth. So you've got to pay these debts back. So then your life should be guided in such a way that this is your activity. You're repaying these debts so you can get free from debt. Otherwise, if you don't do that, it's sinful. Pap. So because of that, not repaying off the debt, that's pap. Again, you've got to take a lower birth. If you repay the debts, you take a higher birth. But Gopal Bhatta Goswami is pointing out in his Sakriya Saradipika introduction that here is another problem. You're doing your duty. This is what you're supposed to do as a civilized human being. Pay off the debts. So you're paying off your debts. That means you have to do worship the forefathers, Pitra Puja. You have to worship the Devatas because they're supplying all the Pitras, your family lineage. You're a result of your grandfathers, great-grandfathers. So you have to respect them. But what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Those who worship the devas, they go to planets of devas. Those who worship the pitras, they go to pitralo. So he says, you're paying off these debts, so you're serving the pitras, the forefathers. You serve the demigods. You become a servant of them. So because you're a servant of those, then you get the reaction is that you go to their place when you leave this body. You get a body with the demigods, you get a body in Pitraloka. Because you're worshipping in them. So it's another problem. You're still taking birth and death. You're not solving the problem of birth and death. So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If you don't follow, pay off your debts as a Rini, you're a debtor, you get sinful reaction, low birth. If you pay them off, you get a better birth in the realms of higher and lower. But the thing is, you're still taking birth in the material world. And what do, the Pitrits? You worship your forefathers. You put the picture up of your father and you do your puja every day, right? In the family. Very cultured family. They will do the father, grandfather. After some time, they will stop worshipping the later generation. The moment they stop worshipping again, he comes down. As long as you're worshipping the pitras, they can stay up there. That's how they stay up in Pitraloka. The family keeps worshipping them, and the forefathers can stay up in Pitraloka and enjoy it with their family relatives. That when the puja stops, they come back again. They take birth in the same family, the same community, because they're so attached to it and they're worshipping. Like this, they can stay in the same community. You have your communities in India. The West is not so much there. But you'll keep taking birth in your Agarwals and your Patel society again and again and again. Until you get, the super soul indicates that you're not, it may go on for a long, long time. Going up and down, Pitraloka and back, same, then you think, no, super soul gives you the indication, that feeling, I'm not getting satisfaction. So let me change. So then you'll change your way, but you'll just end up somewhere else. Same as the devas, you'll worship the devas, you'll become attracted. You can go up and down and keep worshiping them because of your attachment for many, many births. I mean, when we're talking of going up to Devaloka, when we consider the time of the universe, we can't even calculate, so it's not much. But for many, many births, you can go demigod up and down and you're in Devaloka in the same place you go back. But again, that dissatisfaction, I'm not finding it. Because you understand the living entity is searching through 84 lakh different species of life, trying to find that satisfaction. So by intuition, super soul, you're not finding it. You've been up in Devaloka for many times. So then he changes his worship. The demigod he was worshipping, he rejects. Before he was showing so much devotion to his demigod. Then he rejects him. He takes another demigod and he worships. Let me try this way. According to the influence of the modes of material nature, he's being changing all like that. So this is the very complex situation that we're in. Even if you want to be good in the material world, according to the rules and regulations, it's another problem. You're still entrapped in the cycle of birth and death. It's so difficult to get out of this cycle of birth and death. Therefore, Narad Muni, he criticized Narad Vyasadev. He said, you're foolish. Vyasadev, you're a fool. Why you wrote all those scriptures? Dealing with all the different activities, fruitive activities. You've done a disservice here. And now they're using all your rules and regulations. They're taking it as a religion, as the ultimate religion, and they're simply following it. And they're not making any benefit. Just like Buddha. Buddha came primarily to stop the animal killing. So he was saying, he was preaching non-violence. So what do you mean non-violence? You're telling us to stop our religion here in the Vedas. It says you can sacrifice animals, you can eat. Veda is our book, it's our religion. So why are you telling to stop our religion? What kind of saintly person are you? You're coming and preaching, stop your religion. It says that it's our religion. So then he said, okay, forget Veda altogether. Just follow me. Follow the path of Ahimsa. He tricked them. But like that, they were misusing the Veda. So this was Narad Muni's criticism of Veda Vyas, that you've written all these different rules and rituals and everything, and people are thinking, no, this is our religion. Prabhupada gives the example of the Vivaha Samskar. Everybody knows it's the marriage ceremony. It's a very elaborate affair. It goes on for days and weeks sometimes even. And so much money is spent. The father spends as much money as he can. As much money as God, he spends on the daughter's wedding, and he borrows. No matter what class he's coming from, whether he's poor or rich, he'll spend everything he's got, and he'll borrow also. It's such a big thing, the Vivaha ceremony. Shruti Dharma he called me up the other day on the phone. And he was telling me, I don't know how we come to that. And he said, yeah, there's a story, and the daughter's getting married. And so they're making all the arrangements. And she says, Daddy, how much did you spend on your wedding? The mother's wedding, how much did you spend on that? And he said, I don't know. She says, why you don't know? He said, I'm still paying it off. It means that the daughter's grown up and they're getting married, all those that are still paying. It's like that. You spend as much money as you can and you borrow to get your daughters and sons married off. But apart from just the expense, but the purpose of it was sex life, you see. So it's a good thing because the attraction of male and female is very strong. So the cats and dogs, they don't have a marriage institution, so they do it in the street. But human, he can't do that, so you have a marriage institution. So you take husband and wife. Then you're allowed to satisfy that sex desire. So that's the actual purpose of the Vivaha institution, the samskara of marriage. But the sex, intoxication, meat eating, gambling, these are inherent in nature. They're there already. Nobody takes a guru to learn about sex. It's automatically, it's there, it's within nature. But to control that impulse in nature, then there's a marriage institution, so it's a good thing. But after all, the purpose is sex life. So, but then they've got this whole ritual that goes on for days, and also so much money you're spending. Economically, it's good to have knowledge because you can. but the purpose is, it's a restriction. See, so you don't have sex like cats and dogs indiscriminately. You take wife, husband, you live peaceably together like that, according to the rules. That's the purpose of it. It's a restriction. So this is what Narad Muni is telling Vyasadeva. It's a restriction. You put it down, and there's a restriction. Your meat eating is allowed, but it's restricted. You know, you worship the goddess Kali in the dark, etc. So your sex, your intoxication is allowed, Only after worshipping the demigod or the moon god or something, you can, after sacrifice, you can take some intoxicant. So it's inherent in nature. So there's, okay, you it's restricted by these rules, and you can have it, but in a restricted way. He said, this is the purpose of it. But you've written in such a way, and everybody thinks this is our religion. The restriction is our religion. So the marriage, intoxication, the meat eating, if we do it like this is actually our religion, and that's all they're doing. They're living using the restrictions as their religion, so they can have sex, so they can eat meat, so they can have intoxication, etc. But this was not the purpose of the... It was meant as a restriction, not as a religion and a way of life. But now they're saying, this is our culture. This is our religion. So Veda Vyasa said, Narada Muni said, you've bewildered everyone by your writing. They're taking it as religion, all these restrictions you've given. So you should write something to get them out of that. You write Srimad Bhagavatam. Simply glorifying Krishna. Glorifying Krishna, Krishna and his devotees. Just write a book that doesn't get the people entangled in the material nature. You do some good for them. So then he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a saving grace in Kali Yuga. It appeared just after Krishna left. That was the saving grace. Brinda Devi is asking Purnamasi that there are so many scriptures, so many pranas, itihasas, so many different types of scriptures. And sometimes we get one story in one scripture and we get the same story in another scripture, but they're kind of contradictory. There's two stories, the same story, but there's different angles on it, and it's a contradictory. So who should we believe? Purnamasi said, the other scriptures, they can cheat you. But Srimad Bhagavatam will never, never cheat you. So one book, Prabhupada said, Srimad Bhagavatam. We heard the other day, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, if all the literatures of the world, books were burned to ashes, but the Srimad Bhagavatam remained, there will be no loss to the world. Because Srimad Bhagavatam will not cheat us. It kicks out all the cheating processes. And simply establishes the pure relationship of the living entity with Krishna. And that is what is needed. Simply to understand one's relation with Krishna, to act in that capacity, in that relationship, with a favorable devotional service attitude, and come to the stage of developing again our forgotten love for Krishna. So this is what is needed, the only thing that's needed. And all the other rules and regulations, they're simply for this purpose. Yesterday we heard, always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. Always remembering Krishna means spontaneous devotional service. Never forgetting Krishna means Vedi Bhakti. We can't spontaneously remember Krishna, so we perform Vedi Bhakti. Then we won't forget Krishna. So, like this, the living entities are always bewildered. Unless they meet the devotee, they come to the point of devotional service, they will always be bewildered in this material world. So, what is the best position to be? It's simply to be situated in a position of devotional service. Bhakti, rendering loving devotional service to Krishna. And this is ultimately what is to be understood through all the scriptures. Prabhupada said, Krishna is saying so clearly in Bhagavad Gita that he is to be known through the Vedas, It is he who is to be served. It is he one has to surrender to. And Prabhupada said, if anybody comes to the conclusion, doesn't come to the conclusion of bhakti in Bhagavad Gita, he said, he is a madman. All those scholars who are writing Bhagavad Gita, they don't come to the conclusion of bhakti, he said, they are all madmen. So these are most of these scholars today. They're all madmen. They haven't come to the conclusion of bhakti. And they're simply speculating on what Krishna means when he is speaking Bhagavad Gita. So here, how the bewildered living entity is transmigrating 84 lakh species of life. That's his business. That's all he's doing on the wheel of karma, being crushed again and again and again, trying to find that ultimate satisfaction. And he never finds it. He's not satisfied until he meets a devotee. Prabhupada said, then the mind can actually take rest in the holy name. Otherwise, mind is non-stop going here. The product, it's composed of insurmountable desire. That's all it does is desire. So it doesn't find any rest. Everybody's looking for that peace of mind, that shelter, that rest. Prabhupada said it can find shelter in the holy name. Otherwise, it will just go on and on and on, birth after birth after. Never finding satisfaction. Just like the Prabhupada gives the example of the little baby crying. And the Matajis have got the baby, ooh, kuchi, kuchi, trying to make him, he doesn't stop. So she gives to the next Mataji. And the next Mataji's got the baby, kuchi, kuchi, koo, and she's pulling his cheek. No, he's still crying. She gives to the next Mataji, whatever she's doing. No. They pass it round, baby's crying, it doesn't stop. Comes to the original mother. Put in the lap of the original mother. Satisfied. So like that, we are searching, birth out, satisfied, we don't find it. We come to Krishna, at last, satisfied. That's our satisfaction. So Chaitanya Charitamrita is teaching, the bhukti mukti siddhi kami, sakli ashanta. At bhukti, you want material enjoyment, you want any kind of siddhi, any kind of perfection, you want mukti. As long as you have any of these desires, you will not be satisfied, ashanta. But if one is a bhakta, he's shanta. He's the only one who's shanta. All the others are ashanta. Because they all have a desire. They want some kind of material enjoyment. They want some kind of liberation. They want some kind of siddhi, yogi siddhi. The devotee doesn't want these things. The devotee also has desire. The bhukti mukti siddhi kami, what do they want from their... They want happiness. They're pursuing the path of sense gratification for happiness. They're pursuing the path of jnana for happiness. They're pursuing the path of yoga for happiness. The devotee is also performing devotional service for happiness. So then what is the difference? The difference is that the karmis jnanis, they want happiness for themselves. The devotees, they want happiness, but they want Krishna's happiness. So they act in such a way to bring Krishna happiness. Therefore, they become satisfied. And the others do not. So, in our International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which is being given by Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, Rupa Goswami, they just happen to be residents of Goloka, come down to give this process of devotional service, how to get back to Goloka. Nobody knows better than them. They have the topmost vision. They can see the best way to go to Vaikuntha, the best way to stay in the material world, the best way to go to Goloka. And so they give. They come and they give. Here is the best. You can go to Golok this way by following the process we give, because we're residents of Golok. We're giving you that opportunity. This is the purpose of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, to give everybody the opportunity to take Braja Prema. So those who have Braja, they've come and given the process of devotional service that we've got today. Prabhupada's put it all together into the National Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's a process to go back to Golok. You won't go back to Vaikuntha. If you want, you can go to Vaikuntha. But if you follow the process, for the proper, you go back to Golok directly. How? By the mercy of the residents. You need help. Prabhupada says here, you need help. Unless you get help by the Supreme Person, you can't get out of this material entanglement. So they have come to help us. And it's all so personal. And so this message comes right down to, and the spiritual master, he actually gives you that process of devotional service and situates you in that process. So when one is situated, performing devotional service simply for the satisfaction of Krishna and his devotees, he comes perfectly satisfied. He doesn't need anything. He doesn't want anything else. He's perfectly situated. He's in the material world. He's got a material body. He seems far, far away from any kind of perfection according to the Gyanis or the Yogis. But actually, he's in perfection because he's simply serving his consciousness. He's serving Krishna for Krishna's satisfaction. That's all. He's not doing anything for his own satisfaction. So this consciousness is the same as all the inhabitants of Goloka. Their consciousness is, yes, we're Krishna's friends, boyfriends, girlfriends, mother, father, cows, calves, trees. Whatever we are doing is simply for the satisfaction of Krishna. We just want Krishna's pleasure. This is their consciousness. So you can have that same consciousness right here in the material world, in Kali Yuga, with a material body. You can adopt the same consciousness. And as a result, Krishna says, whatever your consciousness is at the time of leaving your body, that state you will attain without fail. So if your consciousness is Golok consciousness, what is your next destination? According to Bhagavad Gita. That's the only place you can go. Because Krishna says you're going to go wherever your consciousness is fixed on at the time of leaving your body. So that place doesn't exist where only service to Krishna is going on in the material world. So you won't take another material birth. And it doesn't go off in Devaloka. They have motivation, the demigods. They want the position. So you won't go to Devaloka. Where are you going to go? You're going to go to that place where pure devotional service, unmotivated devotion is being... You go directly back to Goloka. And even if you want mukti or siddhi, sometimes we want mukti because it's a problem living in the material world. It is a struggle for existence. It's a horrible place. Krishna says himself, miserable, place of birth and death. It's suffered, there's so much suffering here. So we may use that, let me become free from suffering. Let me become liberated. Then I can serve Krishna purely. Well, it seems not a bad desire, but still, it's actually a desire for mukti, isn't it? Let me become free from the modes of material nature. Then I can serve Krishna purely because I'd be in pure condition, not affected by material nature. Then I can render pure devotional service for Krishna's pleasure. But still it's a desire. You want mukti. You want freedom from the suffering, from the modes of material nature. But whatever you want, mukti, mukti, siddhi, in the name of devotional service to Krishna, it is still the easiest way to get that situation. Ultimately, that is the situation we want to get. It's not to desire the freedom from material nature. Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita, how does a transcendentalist live? He doesn't try to enjoy the material world, nor does he try to get out of it. It's simply the other side of enjoyment, trying to get out of it. So he's indifferent. But he just performs service to Krishna. And if you're situated just doing service to please Krishna, for Krishna's satisfaction only, or the devotee's satisfaction, you get the instruction from Guru, that can be your life's mission, simply to satisfy the desire of Guru. That's my only business in life. A Vaishnava, he doesn't live for himself. He simply lives for others, for spreading this mission. He has no personal desire. So one comes to that state of simply executing the order of the spiritual master. It becomes his life and soul. He doesn't know anything else beyond this. It's not for his own satisfaction. He's perfectly situated. And whatever he desires, he'll get that quicker being in that situation than striving for it, striving to become free from the modes of material, striving to control his mind, striving to control his senses. That's nice. It's okay, Krishna's saying all these in the Bhagavad Gita. But you get all the result of all these things. You'll get it quicker simply by absorption in service of Krishna and his devotees without any other motivation. You'll get those automatically, the sense control, the mind control, the perfections, Brahma, Buddha, Prasad. You'll get all those automatically quicker than if you're endeavoring for them. And you'll be satisfied right now. But as long as you're trying to conquer the mind, trying to conquer the senses, come to the stage of liberation, you're not satisfied because a battle is going on. So Bhukti Mukti Siddhi, Shakliyashan, they're all at peace with the devotee. He can be situated right now simply by being situated in his constitutional position of serving Krishna with a favorable attitude right now. And that's all, the perfection is there. And this is this is the process that Rupa Goswami has given us. It's so simple. Prabhupada said, Krishna, it's so simple that you'll miss it. It's so simple, you'll miss it. You'll be looking for other things to do. But I've got to control my mind, haven't I? That's what I'm supposed to be doing, control my senses. That's okay if you want to. But it's to bring you to the point of being situated in devotional service where you have no desire for anything except to please Krishna or his devotee. So that you can take, the Prabhupada said, one moment Krishna, you can be in one moment Krishna. Or it could take you many, many births. Simple for the simple, Prabhupada said. But if you're complicated, it'll be more complicated. You'll be thinking, well, I have to do more than this, don't I? But no. You just be situated in the... In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said the same thing. Shtana Shriti. They asked him, you know, what should we do? He said, stay where you are. He didn't say, all come to join, come to the temple, put on saffron, or all go to the forest or the Himalayas. Stay where you are. But just absorb yourself in devotional service with no other motivation. So it's such a simple process. It can be applied anywhere, anyone, anytime, any circumstance. And that is perfect satisfaction. You're going to be completely satisfied right now. And as long as you're striving to control your senses, control your mind, you're not going to be satisfied. Until you reach that perfection, then you'll be satisfied. But until that time, But right now you can be satisfied simply by performing devotional service for the satisfaction of Krishna and his devotees only, not for my satisfaction. Then, at last, you're situated perfectly. But then it doesn't matter, you're here or spirit, Vaikuntha or Golok. Where does it matter, heaven or hell? So this is ultimate satisfaction. Otherwise, the foolish living embodied being, completely bewildered, have to suffer repeated death, which is against our nature. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai, Shama Veda Bhaktivinoda ki, Nitai Gopremanandi.